This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Long story short, the British Raj basically came to an end after their racist and bigoted rule of 200 years. First 100 years of taking territory within India, annexing state after state, territory after territory, getting their clutches onto the territory. And once they had their clutches onto the territory, they started to drain the country dry. In conclusion, the 200 years rule of British East India Company and the British Raj over India costed India $45 trillion. From the year 1765 to 1938, it is estimated that Britain took $45 trillion from India, which is 14.5 times the economy of Britain today. Are you listening? Which is 14.5 times the economy of Britain today. This is how much. What you see in London, in central London, all those buildings, all those lavish, big, you know, Victorian churches and everything. Where do you think this money came from? Where do you think this money came from? Okay. All these Victorian buildings, magnificent, you know, monuments and structures. India was bled dry from being one of the richest countries in the world. It became one of the poorest countries in the world. There were massacres. There were famines, man-made famines. 30 million people died in these 200 years directly due to the British ruling policies. There was a famine in 1770s. 6 million Bengalis died in that famine directly as a result of the policies of the East India Company. Then there were famines in the 19th century from 1870s to 1890s. Okay, millions died in those famines. And last but not least, 1943, the famine, which was not caused by Churchill. Churchill did not cause the famine, but he definitely escalated the debt toll by directly not sending food to those people who were starving to death. 170,000 ton wheat came from Australia, docked at Calcutta. It was sent to Britain because it was needed for the Europeans. It could not be fed to Indians. Churchill was repeatedly warned about the upcoming catastrophe. The famine had started to show in 1941. But the reason why 1943 is mentioned as the year of the famine, because that's when the death toll rose to 4 million people dead. 4 million people directly as a result of the policies of Winston Churchill, who's found on the back of the £5 note. I don't know why. I don't know when this world will wake up, when we will actually realize that we cannot glorify people like this and see them as our heroes. Churchill specifically wrote when he was told that people are dying in India right now due to the famine. He said, "When will Gandhi die?" He wrote on the paper, on the report that was sent to him on in the margins, "When will Gandhi die?" Then he said about the Indian people, "These are a beastly people with a beastly religion. It is their fault they are dying because they breed like rabbits." These are the words of Churchill. I'm quoting word by word. Winston Churchill. Right? So, 1943, 4 million Bengalis died as a result of that famine. Okay? It is estimated 1.8 billion Indians died during this 200 years rule of the British East India Company and the British Raj. 1.8 billion people died as a result of this rule. Okay? It is estimated. I don't know how correct that estimate is. During the First and the Second World War, India gave millions of soldiers to fight for democracy and freedom and honor of Britain. In the First World War, 1 million soldiers came from India. Close to 100,000 of them died. About one third were Muslim. Did you know that? Did you know that? Hundreds of thousands of Muslims, they put their lives at stake for the freedom and the honor and the survival of Britain. These people have an audacity, some of these politicians and these bigots, to point a finger at Muslims and say that you Muslims are parasites. You've come here to do this and do that. Okay, they can never pay the Muslims back. Never. In the Second World War, 2.3 million soldiers given by India to fight for Britain. Hundreds of thousands of them dead. How do I know this? You know, when soldiers died in the First World War, the British government actually gave plaques made of copper, this big, like a plate. On those plaques, it was written, "He died for honor and freedom." He died for honor and freedom, and the name of the soldier is there, Muhammad Amin, Qasim Khan, Muhammad Asad. For example, I have those plaques in my personal possession. I have collected some of them. Okay, and where do you find them? You go to Pakistan to one of the scrap yards and you will find them being sold in scrap yards. Families, just, you know, three generations down the line, no one cares what the old man did. And the old man died. He died for the honor and freedom of Britain. 1 million of those plaques were given to soldiers because 1 million died, because those were only given to those who died. Bronze plaques. And then medals were given to those who survived, silver medals. And on the rims, the names were inscribed. Each and every single one of those medals were personalized, given by King George to the soldier as a token of gratitude for taking part in this war. And who was paying the cost? The Indian men, including Muslims, and Indian people who were taxed. Two-thirds of the expense of this military was coming from Indian taxpayers, not British taxpayers in Britain. This was the British Raj in India. And I can talk about the Jallianwala Bagh massacre in April 1919, when one of these racist British generals, his name was General Dyer, who ordered to shoot armless people, you know, harmless people and armless, you know, people who had no weapons. They were protesting there, and it was the day of Baisakhi, you know, the celebration of the Sikhs. Men, women and children, they were shot dead. Casualties, they amount to, some people say, according to the British, 370, according to the Indian witnesses, 1500. According to General Dyer's own confession, 1,650 bullets were fired into the crowds, and none of them was wasted. Not one bullet was wasted. General Dyer was put on trial and acquitted. In fact, the House of Lords praised him for the great job he did for the empire. Jungle Book, Mowgli, you know, who wrote it? Kipling, right? You know Kipling? Jungle Book, Mowgli, yes? You know what he said? He said he saved India. General Dyer doing this saved India. So this was basically the legacy of the British rule in India. So when the British left India in 1947, India was one of the poorest countries in the world from being the richest when they took over, right? And then it doesn't stop there. During the partition, one of the greatest catastrophes took place, which was the partition of Punjab. Okay, 1 million people died as a result of migration, forced migration. Muslims coming from the Indian side to the Pakistani side, and Sikhs and Hindus going from Pakistani side to the Indian side, and in between, thugs, bands of thugs and robbers and rapists were on the loose. Over 100,000 women were kidnapped and forcefully married to their kidnappers and rapists, their rapists. And 1 million people lost, over 1 million. A rough estimate, a conservative estimate, is that over 1 million people died in this forced migration within the territory of the Punjab. This happened in 1947, August 1947. I have met a woman myself This is me, an eyewitness. I wasn't even born then. I was born 40 years later. But I met an old woman in the mid-90s in the Punjab, in the city of Jhelum. And I saw this old woman, a very kind, compassionate woman. Allah have mercy on her, because I'm pretty sure she has passed away. She was very old then. She had 3 missing fingers. I asked her, what happened to you? How did you lose these fingers? She took a deep breath and she said, I had a son who was a teenager. During the partition, some drunk Sikh men came into my house by force. And they killed my son in front of me. And then one of them asked me for a pot, to hand the pot over to him. And I basically stretched my hand and he struck my hand with a sword and I lost 3 of my fingers. These 3 fingers are lost at that time. This is, you know, a victim of that violence who I met personally. My own grandmother told me that she saw blood running through the sewage canals of the city of Jhelum. Atrocities took from both sides. We have to be fair. The Muslims were doing it. Those thugs banned, those bands of, you know, cruel, you know, criminals from this side and from that side, both, you know, sides, they were committing atrocities. And there are many noble examples of people saving lives too from both sides. Many noble examples. Many people gave refuge to Sikhs on this side in Lahore, in the city of Lahore and other places. And on the other side, many Hindus and Sikhs gave refuge to Muslims. But the majority had lost the plot. And this was all caused by the administration. Lord Mountbatten, the last Viceroy of India, who was himself a pervert, later on it was shown in British newspapers, actually, articles were published that he was actually, you know, into young boys who would come into the Navy, because he was a naval officer, right? He would take advantage of his position and try to have relationships with younger naval officers with them, okay? Use his position. I mean, these are articles published in the British newspapers. I'm not making this up, okay? His wife had an affair with Nehru, right? Who was also a Congress leader. While Gandhi may be sincere, but Nehru was clearly not right in the head. He was having an affair with the wife of the last Viceroy of India with his knowledge. In fact, there's an interview I watched myself. It's on YouTube. The daughter of Lord Mountbatten, she confesses that my mother, Edwina Mountbatten, had a relationship with Nehru. What was the nature of this relationship? She said, I'm not clear, but they clearly had some kind of intimate relationship. And this is why the partition of India and Pakistan was messed up by this relationship between Nehru and the Mountbattens. And the Muslims were basically, you know, not given their due. What was due to be given to them, a lot of it was taken on the very day when partition was announced. And this very man, Mountbatten, came to Pakistan, to Karachi, on the 14th of August, when he delivered the speech for the independence of Pakistan and handing over Pakistan to Jinnah as the Governor General. In his speech, he said that the Muslims of Pakistan have a model in Akbar, the Mughal Emperor. Jinnah comes back. He says, no, we have a better model than Akbar. We have Muhammad Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam to follow. So, this was the doing of the British Raj in India. The lecture has gone on for longer than I thought. But there's a lot of detail to cover, brothers. What I shared with you today is not even tip of the iceberg. Okay, you may be shocked by some of these details, but let me tell you, what I shared with you is not even the tip of the iceberg. Start reading books. Okay, not by apologists of the Raj, but those who have actually written down the real impact of the Raj on the Indians and the Indian subcontinent. Okay, one book I would strongly recommend is titled Inglorious Empire by Shashi Tharoor. Okay, Inglorious Empire by Shashi Tharoor. It's a good book to read on that very topic. Okay, and the books of William Dalrymple, One of them is the anarchy. Okay, the anarchy, basically A-N-A-R-C-H-Y. Okay, that book, read that book. And then the other book is White Moguls. And there's another book by him titled The Last Mughal. And another book is Return of a King. And it is about the British invasion of Afghanistan in 1839, 1840 and 1841. And he documents what happened during that invasion. Return of a King. Four of his books, absolutely amazing, must reads to understand what's happening in India at that time during the British rule. Absolutely amazing books. Okay. On that note, I will stop. Yes, sorry. First book was The Anarchy, okay, then The Last Mughal, The White Mughals, and then Return of a King. Return of a King, okay. On that note, I will stop my lecture for today. Thank you so much for listening, and inshallah, we will go to Q&A. Jazakumullah khairan, walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. And every single thing I said today, brothers, I can substantiate it with evidence. I can give you references of the books, but I don't want to exhaust you with references. But I put a lot of history into one lecture, so you'll have to go and start doing research on these topics, Googling these topics and Googling these names. You know, Google the names and you will see a lot more references and details and sources, inshallah ta'ala. Jazakumullahu khairan. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.